Our New Testament reading today is from Mark chapter 10, verses 46 through 52. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. Then they reached Jericho, and as Jesus and his disciples left town, a large crowd followed him. A blind beggar named Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the road. When Bartimaeus heard that Jesus of Nazareth was nearby, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." "Be quiet," many of the people yelled at him. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." When Jesus heard him, he stopped and said, "Tell him to come here." So they called the blind man. "Cheer up," they said. "Come, he's calling you." Bartimaeus threw aside his coat, jumped up, and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked. "My rabbi," the blind man said, "I want to see." And Jesus said to him, "Go, for your faith has healed you." Immediately the man could see, and he followed Jesus down the road. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So, Gianna isn't with us this morning because she's home sleeping, which is what Heather and I would like to be doing, because Gianna kept us up most of last night. When babies are born, they do not come out with a lot of skills. They can breathe, and they can cry. And that's about what they've got. Gianna actually cried before she was even fully born. She got her head out and cried. None of our kids have done that before. I didn't even think that was possible. But this girl has a set of lungs, and she can use them. She will holler, and it's amazing how effective that is, actually. No matter where she is, if she starts crying, we get there pretty quickly. It works. She's figured this out. So at 11 p.m. and 1:30 a.m. and 3:30 a.m. and 5:30 a.m., when she cries out, it turns out her parents listen. Funny thing, there's not enough coffee. These stories from the readings today actually intersect with this a bit. They are about people crying out. In fact, the story of Job at its core is a story about Job crying out to God, of Job in the midst of suffering, in the midst of loss, in the midst of not understanding why his life is going the way it is. And this is one of the fundamental human questions, right? Why do we suffer? And in the middle of this suffering, Job doesn't get answers. But what the scripture records is a very clear history of Job crying out. Job cries out to who? To God, right? Job's friends show up, and what do they say?
"Curse God and die."
"Shut up." "This must be your fault." Right? Job wonderfully doesn't settle for that. He doesn't take the answers of the group or the crowd, but continues to plead his case before God. Job, ironically, and I think this is actually one of the profound statements of the book that's easy to skip over, is that Job never gets an answer to why. And the author of the book of Job is very intentional about this. We all want answers. When bad things happen, when people walk into synagogues and start shooting, our instant question is why? And there isn't an answer to that in Job. Job doesn't get a why, but Job actually might get something better, right? It was our reading from last week. God himself shows up. God shows up, and Job's response is, "Oh, well, I don't know why, but God's presence is enough," right? It's a better answer to the question, actually, than why do we experience this suffering, is that we have a God who's willing to be with us in the middle of the suffering, who doesn't leave us alone and who doesn't abandon us. This New Testament story is such a powerful one, too, right? Because Jesus is walking down the road, and we've talked about it before, but physical ailments, like being blind, were viewed very much at the time as a sure sign of God's absence, as a curse. If you had something wrong with you, that meant that God was not with you, that you had probably done something wrong, Just like Job's friends, right? Same answer. They hadn't actually figured out that the point of Job at all yet at that point. And if you were having a hard time, if you were blind, you had done something wrong. In fact, there's other stories, right, where Jesus, I mean, the people are debating who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind. And Jesus is like, nope, that's not what's going on here. So when there's a blind beggar on the side of the road, the rest of the culture is looking at Bartimaeus as somebody who is kind of forsaken by God, somebody who has probably sinned, who's separate from God. God is clearly not with Bartimaeus. And what do we see Bartimaeus doing? Crying out, yelling. He's shouting, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Now, that term to us doesn't mean much, but to anybody in that place at that time, "Son of David" is a very politically charged term. Who is David? David was the king of Israel, right? So if you are the son of David, this is a very direct statement about who is king. Who was king at the time? Herod the Tetrarch. Kind of a brutal, powerful ruler. Herod had no qualms crushing any sort of opposition or resistance. In fact, one of the first stories in the Bible is Herod doing what?
Murdering
hundreds of children just on the off chance that one of them might threaten his throne. So when somebody decides to start yelling, son of David, have mercy, the crowd's like, shut up, man, you're going to get yourself killed. This is not a wise course of action. But apparently Bartimaeus believes something about Jesus that goes beyond what can be seen with the eyes, right? That this is also a confession. Son of God, son of David, have mercy on me. Is crying out and believing that Jesus is something more than just a rabbi. That Jesus is Messiah, that Jesus is King, that Jesus is also the Son of God, come here to bless us, to be with us, to heal us. Everybody tells him to be quiet, and kind of just like Job, does he listen? No, he cries out all the more. I love that about this text almost more than anything else. The persistence. That in spite of the fact that the dominant culture around him was telling him to knock it off, to be quiet, to accept his lot, and to sit down and...
Where something worse happens.
Yeah. He ignores that and he cries out all the more. This is so encouraging because we have probably all been in positions a little bit like Bartimaeus, right? There, if you haven't yet, just hang on. This is life. There are going to be times where it doesn't work out right, where it hurts, where it's not fair. And this story is such an encouragement to cry out all the more anyway, to persist, to keep speaking, to keep pleading our case to God. Because what does God do in this story? I mean, Jesus says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, right? He's yelling, and I love this. When Jesus heard him, he stopped. Do we trust this? Do we trust that God is willing, when he hears our cries, to stop? To turn towards us? Because this is what Job believes, right? Job's insistence on calling out to God in the midst of suffering is an act of trust. It's an act of belief that God is, in fact, listening, that God is present, that God will actually hear. And so it is worth it to keep crying out to God. It is worth it to keep turning our attention to God, to keep asking, like a baby, to keep yelling from our crib. There's some incredible, deep truth in this story. Besides, I mean, Jesus stops, and he asks Bartimaeus, what do you want me to do for you? If you were here last week, remember how that story, and this is the one passage in Mark. How does the passage with James and John start? James and John coming and saying, Jesus, we have this thing we want you to do for us, right? They're both coming to Jesus and asking for a favor from Jesus. And Jesus comes, to Bartimaeus and says the same question, right? What do you want me to do for you? What is it that you want? I deeply believe God has created all of us, that our desires are created by God. That God, this text points out that the right thing to do, and I think in every single one of these cases, is to bring our desires to God. Jesus asks us, what do you want me to do for you? Even in the case of James and John, where those desires are kind of blind and very immature and unexamined, the right thing to do is to take our desires to God. In fact, I think most of the time the problem isn't that our, like, the stereotypical approach to sin is that our desires are too strong. C.S. Lewis says this isn't the problem at all. It's that our desires are too weak. It's that we settle for things that are far less than what God has actually created us to want. We'll settle for making mud pies when God has offered us a vacation at the ocean, right? This is so true. When Jesus stops and asks him, what do you want me to do for you? He unabashedly asks to see. Which is in such contrast to the disciples, right? When Jesus asks what he can do for them, they're like, we want to be first. They are so blind, right? And Mark is very intentionally setting these stories side by side that this blind guy, who culture would view as somebody very separate from God and unimportant, is actually getting sight in a way that the disciples hadn't seen yet, right? He gets to see God. Rabbi, the blind man said, I want to see. And Jesus said to him, go, for your faith is healed. And instantly the man could see, and he followed Jesus down the road. This implies that he gets who Jesus is. You follow the rabbi, you believe he's speaking for God. Bartimaeus gets this. I mean, it's not just about the physical sight, right? Bartimaeus gets a vision of actually getting to see and experience who God is, to experience God's care for him as a human being. And the same thing Job gets, right? There's some incredible parallels between these two stories. They're both told by people around them to be quiet. They both continue to plead their cases before God. In both cases, God shows up present and responds to their cries. And they both have a vision of God at the end of it, right? They both get to see God for who God is. Should give us some courage to keep crying out all the more, right? That maybe that's not the problem. Maybe the problem is when we quit crying out to God too soon. This text encourages our persistence, our being willing to keep seeking God, to keep asking for God's help, to keep connecting with God, because God is listening. God still wants to act on our behalf. By the way, where did this story take place? They reached Jericho. Anybody remember the story of Jericho? That place where the Israelites really strategically, carefully planned the battle and through the sheer force of their might conquered the city, right? No, that is not what happened to Jericho. What happened to Jericho is God doing something for his people they could not do for themselves. When the Israelites got to Canaan, they sent spies into Jericho and were like, these people are like giants. We're like grasshoppers in their eyes. Their city's impregnable. There is no way we will ever take over this land, because have you seen this place? And God says, sit back. Oh, actually, march. Just walk and watch what I will do. And so the Israelites walk around the city once a day for 7 days, and then 7 times on the last day, and they shout, and the walls fall down. God does something for his people that they could never do for themselves. Our strength does not lie in chariots or the sword or our bank accounts or even our physical capacity. Our strength lies in our God. Our strength lies in crying out. And that we, as humans, if we can love our babies and respond to them when they cry out, how much more can we trust that our God will also respond to us? Jesus said, go, for your faith has healed you. Faith, it's trust, it's pisteo. It's not this belief in a set of theological precepts. Faith is trust in a person, in a God. Believing that this God is for us and with us. Bartimaeus gets this experience, right? Jesus stops and responds and comes to him and is with him. Bartimaeus sees that God is Emmanuel, God with us, and that God is still hearing our cries and that God is still responding. And this is what it means to have faith, is to believe that even if he didn't hear us on the first cry, we can cry out all the more because we believe that he is for us and with us and that he wants to respond. I need to fix this, sorry. So, one of my favorite, I was really lucky. Growing up, we lived in Wenatchee, Washington for a while before we moved to Hawaii, and I was probably 4 years old when my parents strapped the first pair of skis on my feet and took me to the Bunny Hill, and I remember going down between my dad was tall, 6'1", and had these really long skis, these 210 centimeter skis, and he'd put those in a snow plow and put my little feet between his, and we'd cruise back and forth down the Bunny Hill. And by the time I was probably 5, and by the next season, I was great. I was good. I was bombing all over the mountain by myself. It was so much fun. And when your center of gravity is that low, you don't even really need to turn. You can just point your skis down the hill and go. And I thought it was pretty hot stuff, and I wasn't afraid at all. And I would just take off and go down runs. And most of the time, it worked pretty well. But one day, I was off bombing down a run somewhere off on the side and fell in a way that pinned my skis into the snow and me underneath them, and I was stuck. And I was by myself. And this wasn't part of my plan for the day. And I wiggled and twisted, and I tried to get my skis undone, and I couldn't. But you don't have poles when you're that age, so you don't even have anything to get back there and release the bindings with, and I could not get out. So I did what you do. And I started hollering. Dad! Dad! No dad. Kept hollering. Dad! Help! Dad! Dad! Help! And it wasn't too long until I heard some skis coming over the top of the hill. And there was my dad. And he came down and he pulled me out of the snow and put me back on my feet, because he had heard me hollering from the chairlift as he was going up. Of course he did. Of course he did. Because that's what dads do. Sorry, it's not working today. We have a father who loves us far more than any human father. We have a father who longs to respond to our cries, who does not look down on us or think less of us because we need his help, but in fact delights in responding to us, in being present with us, in giving his presence to us. He's still for us. He's still with us. This is what we get to learn from these stories, that we too can cry out all the more. This isn't a weakness. This is a strength. This is what our God invites us into today and each day, that we can trust that he is good, that he still hears when we cry out to him, and that he still stops, turns his attention to us and says, "What can I do for you?" Let's sing "Be Thou My Vision" as our response, that God would give us the sight to see this, just as he gave Bartimaeus and Job the sight.